Welcome to Talking Up Music Education, a podcast from the NAMM Foundation.
Welcome to a special episode of Talking Up Music Education, recorded live from the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. President and CEO of the National Association of Music Merchants, Joe LeMond, is sitting in for host Mary Lerson, and his guests include legendary artist advocates Ben Folds and Ben Vereen.
Hello, everyone. I'm Joe LeMond, President and CEO of NAMM. Sitting in for Mary Lerson, head of the NAMM Foundation, who's in Scotland today, meeting with an international gathering of music educators. So I'll be hosting today's episode of Talking Up Music Education. We're recording live in Philadelphia during the Democratic National Convention, where we join our partner, Americans for the Arts, with the presentation of the Arts Speak Policy Forum about the transformative power of the arts. So sitting with me today is singer, songwriter, record producer, pianist, composer, and featured speaker for NAMM's Generation Next program, College Kids at the NAMM Show, and music and arts advocate, Ben Folds. Thank you, Ben, for being here.
Good to be here.
You got into Philly last night, survived that rainstorm and and all the lightning and thunder.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy welcome to the city. Also joining us is legendary actor, singer, dancer, and Broadway star, and wellness through the arts activist, Ben Vereen, who also brought us in with that beautiful performance.
My pleasure.
Way to get the thing started in an inspiring way.
Get everybody on the same tone.
That aligns everyone.
Right? Aligns everyone.
So this message goes out to all those who care deeply about music and arts education and want to be able to do something about it in their local community. It has been an incredible week, actually. We were in Cleveland last week and here in Philadelphia. It is really energizing, in my opinion, to take part in the essence of our democracy at both political conventions. And we're representing NAMM members and all who believe that music and the arts are essential to our communities and to our own humanity and well-being. So our thanks to both of you as members of the Americans for the Arts Artists Committee for participating in the Arts Speaks Forum. We're grateful for your contributions as artists and individuals. Now, starting with that idea, I'm a big firm believer in stories. Why is it important for you and other professional artists to organize and to join organizations like Americans for the Arts and participate in advocacy for the arts, our cultural investments, and arts education? Let's start with Ben Vereen. Why is it so important for you to be an activist in this cause?
In the beginning, before time was time, there was the beat. The creator, call it what you want, God, Allah, Buddha, Jesus, Elohim, Yahweh, gave to us the beat, the breath. That beat is within us, and it keeps time. And if we're in tune with that, then we're in tune with the universe. It's important to me that all children, all people, you know, that's the one language that everybody speaks. You play music, and everybody bops their heads around the world. So that is the equalizer for all of us. So it's important to me that the young people are not denied their birthright. Their given right is to feel that beat. And that beat will guide us into a more productive society. But we have been denying the beat. And as you said earlier, we've cut it out of schools. I know that my organization, WTA Wellness Through the Arts, when I got involved and I found out that most of the schools have cut away the arts. And that shocked me because when I was coming up, they were trying to put the arts in school.
In many ways, we're fighting for a generation that isn't going to be getting if we don't do something.
Yes.
Same thing we had growing, the opportunity we had growing up.
Yeah. But you know something? We keep relying on government to do it. We must stop that. The government for the people, by the people. Therefore, the people must decide that they want it and they must do something about it. And I think they are, and they will. If we allow them the voice, we must stand, you know, here and talk about it so they're reminded of who they are. I call people kings and queens. You know why I do that, Ben? To remind you of who you are. You are from a divine creator. You are therefore the expression of that art that created you upon this planet. And I try to remind people of who they are. They are royalty. You are a king. You are a queen. I try to, by us being here at the convention, we're reminding society of who they are. They are the music of life. Their voices mean a lot.
About that king stuff, can I get my wife on the phone? Could you share that message with
her? Yeah, I'd love to. I'd love to. I run into that all the time. You know, I have husbands say, you know, wife say, oh, he called me a queen. I said, then he's a king. Yeah. You know, oh. Really? I married a king? Yes, she did.
So Ben Folds, I mean, you've been such an activist and many times coming to NAMM and being a part of our work. So clearly you've demonstrated that this is important to you, but why?
Well, I don't know if the podcast is long enough for that. There are so many reasons. I mean, I think what Mr. Vereen, if I may call you Ben, just said.
Call me Ben.
Yeah.
Mr. Vereen is my father.
Yeah. Well, maybe Mr. Vereen said it as well.
He did.
But Ben nicely summed up that we're made of music. We're made of art. That's how we communicate. I mean, it's all there. Whether you're starting a business, that's an idea. The way that you do it is artistic. Everything that we succeed at, we do because we persuade others to be a part of it. So even we're sitting here at a convention is made up of people who are bundling ideas, bundling money, bundling creativity, and bundling inspiration to go in one direction or another. I think it would be very hard to do without the pure form of art. It would be very difficult to have a convention without music. It would be very difficult to have your website without well-done graphics. And in the first place, the idea in itself was art. So I think that over time, there has been a policy argument, political argument, that has essentially put out the idea that we should devalue art. The idea that art does not put food on the table, that there is a pecking order where this is more important than this. And that is a flawed idea because it doesn't recognize that we are essentially artistic beings and that our success relies on it. I don't think that art can ever be squashed out of the human spirit. However, I think that there's a danger when we don't realize that we need the arts more than the arts need us. And we need to exercise our most, you know, human function in order to achieve things. For a politician or for a policy argument, for the last 20, 30 years of us getting pounded in the arts with the idea that we are a sideshow sitting over here making little arts and crafts, but that the real important thing is here in the center with all the numbers, that's bad business. Like a good business is run on ideas, a bad business is run on numbers. And even numbers themselves are much more accessible through an artistic method of thinking. So to me, it seems that if we don't stand up for the value of art, that we are a very inefficient and unfair society. That's my opinion.
That is borne out over and over again. Through 5,000 years of recorded human history, every society has made their own music and art. Yeah. It is baked into our DNA, as you say, Ben. Ben, some of your contributions, I'd like to just, you know, talk a little bit about things you've done in your life to promote the arts and maybe what you're still hoping to do and still aspire to do in contributing to this cause to make sure that everyone has access. So talk a little bit about what you've done and what you'd still like is yet to be done.
Like Ben said, you know, if you got enough time,
you got all day.
It's a series. It's been running for a while. What I've done, you can Google me and find out my credentials on what I've on my career and what I've done. But, you know, most people know me for Roots and Broadway and those sort of things, and Pippin and other shows. But that's not the point. The point is the world of art chose me. It's an interesting story because, you know, I believe in divine destiny. I really do. And whether or not we accept it or not, for me, it was this kid in the streets of Brooklyn. And this guy comes along and points to this kid and says, you know, where's your mother? And I go upstairs. Next thing, my mother, this guy selling my mother a bill of goods about some dance school, which isn't a very good dance school. But the idea that he pointed me out and pointed me towards the way of the performing art of life, you know, because I believe the life itself is an art form. It's like you said, you know, the numbers and politicians and these people, it's all an art form. It's an idea. So therefore, from that idea comes the various the outflow of art. Thought is an art form. And so there I was in that vibrational feel, and this gentleman pointed to me, and I took on the go in the direction of the performing arts. And so I feel that I tell people it chose me. Because in my youngness years, I had come upon this planet and running around with the other kids playing, doing my thing, not knowing what direction I wanted to go into, because I wasn't thinking about a direction. But here was the direction pointing to me. And therefore, I came this way. And in coming this way, I found the wonderful, there's a song in Sweet Charity called The Rhythm of Life. I found the rhythm. And the rhythm, I've been playing the rhythm ever since. Now, life has its ups and downs. I mean, I was in a terrible accident in 92, where I had 3 accidents in one day. I was driving my car, and I tell people a tree ran out on the highway and hit my car. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. I hit my head on the roof of the car, damaging an artery to the brain. I woke up in the hospital. The doctor said I would not make it. I woke up in the hospital. Now, you understand something about the performing arts. Once you're trained in this avenue, and you know, I'm laying in the hospital. I have a show one Saturday. I got a broken leg, a broken femur. They've taken my spleen. I had a trach. I had, you know, I was in bad shape. And I'm thinking to myself, I got a show on Saturday. They're going to fix this. Yeah. They're going to fix this. But the point is that the music of life, music, that beat inside of me, that beat that I heard around me, it was important to me to hear the music. To hear the music. And I came to a place in my life where I said, well, whether or not I can be able to do what I'm doing again, I will be all right with this as long as I have the music of life, which is life itself. So therefore, if I try to become a beacon, as we are here today, a beacon for the arts, to remind people, as I said out my opening statement, remind us of who we are. We are greater than what we think. We're greater than what politicians try to confuse us with. We are the greatness in things. But our greatness relies upon that which created us, and that's going back to understanding that beat. That's why I'm such an advocate. I'm such an advocate for the arts. Because the art is life. Life itself is an art form. Stop beating it up.
What I like about what you're saying is that you begin with a real esoteric sounding thing to most people. Like it starts and it's like, oh, well, here come the hippies, you know. But right. Then within a couple moments, you're reminding people that they're actually made of this stuff. It's hard to remember that when you're busting to work or trying to make your life work out. It seems that everything must be pragmatic.
That's the conditioning.
You know, yeah. And so what Ben is doing is reminding you what you already know. And until we get that back, that is until society recalibrates to where Ben's point of view is just obvious and mainstream, which it is. We know that deep inside, but there's a lot of conditioning to make that sound like, oh, here he comes, you know, like, you know, singing that song again. Well, that's fine because you're in the arts and this is what you've done, but we're all in the arts.
Yeah, I love what you say. They look at us as a sideshow.
Yeah.
Yeah. We are your side. We need to be back inside.
We're inside.
We are the side show. We're the in show. I like that.
why do you think, and this is probably, there's cycles that have come and gone, clearly. I mean, there are periods of great art in human history, and then cycles go back and forth. Why do you think in recent history, the arts have been viewed that way? Have we lost some of the sense of community?
Because we separate, because of separatism. We choose to separate ourselves from the creator who created us. That's the art form. We choose to separate. We choose to categorize it and give it less value when it is the value of all things.
It's the equalizer. It actually doesn't work. It is the, you know, the idea that you can utilize. Well, I mean, back to what you ask, I think that that the reason is it has been beneficial in a political conversation to position yourself on the side of austerity. Mm-hmm. The left does it now too, and it should stop. I think that, you know, because if you consider like, look at the arts and you go, okay, well, we could save X amount of money if we didn't spend it on this little sideshow thing, right? But the problem is it's like someone pointed out last week, when we were at the RNC last week, and someone made a very good point. It was I believe it was Lieutenant Governor made a point that it's an investment. Mm-hmm. So it's not an expenditure, it's an investment, because when you put money in, a lot more comes out because you have invested in human beings and people and ideas, and that tends to bring more stuff out. The problem is that everybody knows, whether you're left or right or whichever side of an argument you're on, and the arts is not a partisan argument. The arts is a human argument. But if you say, okay, well, look, I'm Mr. Austerity, and this gets me some votes, and this gets me somewhere, you know deep down inside, your kid's going to get the arts. You're not going to squish the arts out of anything. It's always going to be there. It's a safe bet to say, let's save money on those little arts and crafts, silly people on the side, because you know you'll get it and you know it's going to work anyway. The difference is, and the short-sightedness of that is that the arts are there to work for everybody, and they're there to work for civilization. And civilization, the last time I looked, was the group of people all working together on something. Now, when you try to control art and you say, okay, well, we're not going to give it to you, what do you get? You get a huge movement that comes right from the bottom and bites you in the ass. I mean, look at something like look at gangster rap and Compton. It's like that's art. Now, you might not agree with what they say. It may be uncomfortable to listen to, but the point is that you could not squash the music out of anybody, any neighborhood or anybody. You can't. So they're going to come up, and the great equalizer is that one day they go, hey, guess what? I got something to say. Everybody's going to listen. Last night we were at the convention, and you're hearing beats come out of the speakers for people to come up and speak. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that stuff is straight out of the most bottom down and out class only 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it shoots straight up the system, and it has a lot louder voice than any policy.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. The fact that you try to oppress something, it's going to reveal something.
Oh, yeah, it's going to come out big.
You know, you try to suppress the arts. You try to suppress music, and people find a way to express themselves through it in a way that you might not like.
You're not going to want to hear it.
Because they can use it in any way. Choose ye this day whom you will serve. If you decide to serve the bad, it will show up. If you decide to serve good, it will show up. Who are you going to serve today? Let's serve the arts.
For once in my lifetime, I feel like a giant. I soar like an eagle, as though I had wings. For this is my moment, my destiny calls me. And though it may be once in a lifetime, I'm going to do great things. Yeah!
We're here engaged in this very, very democratic system of having our voice be heard. I mean, we're here to talk about music and arts and the inclusion into our communities, into our schools. What have you learned, or why do you think it's so important? You've both been joined up with Americans for the Arts. You've been very vocal in your support of it. Why do you think it's important to work within the system the way we're doing? Because you could argue that from the musical standpoint, this is the problem. Yet we're here.
You know, policy has to match.
James Brown said, what a good foot. James Brown said it this way: stop throwing rocks at the building, get in the building. When you're inside, you can change from the inside out. It's easy for us to stand outside and protest and carry on. Let's get on the inside and remember why we came to the inside to make the change.
Well, look at the disconnect. Nobody believes right now. It must be at an all-time most cynical, probably deservedly cynical moment for the public in general, that if you have an idea or if you have a policy, a bill you want passed, someone you want in office, people don't believe that their voice is being heard at all because they don't see a reflection in policy that matches what they know everybody wants. You can take a poll and say, well, look, A huge number of people want the public option or something like that. But then when you watch it on television, you're like, it looks incredibly unpopular, but everyone looks at each other and goes, yep, well, that was pretty popular, but they said it wasn't there. And I think with the arts is the same way. When you have, do you know, like we're fighting over money for always for the NEA. And we hope that you know, the NEA can get $150 million a year, which would be a lot.
Well, we're claiming it. We're claiming that. We're not going to struggle and fight anymore. We're claiming that the people are going to come forward and support the NRA because of the fact that it is their lives.
Yeah. That's $150 million. If you figured that the U.S. government spends by the minute, let's say it's an equal expenditure, and we just spend it by the minute to get to those trillions of dollars at the end of the year. Okay. Mm-hmm. The art spending, you know, for NEA, that's 21 minutes in one day and you're done. So what we're saying then to the American public is we're saying, by it being such a small, it should be much more. By that being such a small priority, we're saying it's only worth 21 minutes in your entire year to spend on the arts. The rest of the time is spent on everything else. And so when you have an argument for it, you say, well, I think we need more. And then there's an austerity party on the other side. And it's left and right. You've got an austerity thing going on. They're saying, oh, you can't spend any more money. It's like, it's not a lot of money. But the problem is that if you don't match policy a little bit and budget a little bit with the wishes of the people, then you've got a real big problem. That's how Trump got where he is right now, because there's a huge disconnect. So if nothing else, even as a symbolic measure, the federal government has to step in and spend more money on the arts, because they're certainly making revenue off of the arts. So I think that we deserve to have the money for kids. The only other thing I'd want to say about this is for educators, because that's where this is going out to, and teachers. Somehow we make that look like it's not a cool thing, like it's cooler to be a rock star. It's cooler to be some guy with tight leather pants that shakes your ass on stage and has to have a stylist in order to get up in the morning. I think the teachers are absolutely the coolest part. That is as cool as you can get. And we've taken the romance out of that. It's a terribly, like, we need to have movies about, more movies about teachers and how amazing this is, because, and I think that if you take something,
it won't sell.
Yeah, you need to.
It won't sell.
It won't sell.
It won't sell. You know why? Because of the fact we've been conditioned, not that it does not, it's not important.
Well, we're here.
We got to recondition. Right. Exactly. We've got to put value in that which is valuable to us, which is life itself. I love what you're saying about the fact that 20 minutes. Do you know something? If you give yourselves, it's like prayer meditation, you know, if you focus in on the good of life, but just 5-10 minutes a day, your rest of your day will be amazing, because you gave homage to that which created you. And we're talking about that right now. It's the beat of life.
Mm-hmm. Well, you triggered a good thought. I was thinking of the role of the educator, the teacher in music and arts. And I suspect that both of you probably were inspired at an early age by one or more teachers.
Oh,
Ben,
yeah.
Tell me, you know,
what about
an experience.
Oh, yeah.
About a teacher who might have really inspired you or made you stick with it and kept you going. Any memories of that?
Thank you, Dr. Rachel Yoakum. Thank you, Dr. Hill. Thank you, Dr. Bartholomew. Thank you, Gertrude Scher. Thank you, Norman Walker. Thank you. The list goes on and
Martha Graham.
Martha Graham allowed me to come to high school performing arts. I'm talking about the teachers who were there on a daily basis, you know, B.J. Johnson, who I'm talking about these people who encouraged, who said, keep going, who you got something that I did not know I had. But they saw it.
And you know? Remember these people all these years later.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. All of them. I could see them. They were there. They were there. I was sitting in a classroom with gangsters in junior high school. I'd been kicked out of a table
full of gangsters.
Yeah, you know that. Yeah, it was. I was in a 2-digit school. They sent me to a 3-digit school. Really down to the rug, right? And I'm sitting in my classroom with guys named like Killer, Shank Diablo, you know, cats like this, you know, Shank, you know. And my teacher was a guy named, it was Mr. Hill. And he said, I'm doing a production of The King and I, an all-black production of the King and I. This is before it was popular. And he was saying, we're going to have an orchestra, an all African-American orchestra. And I want you to be a part of this show. I played the interpreter. He said, the King and I didn't know what a King and I was. I'd never been to Broadway. I didn't know what it was. But he said, no, you are coming this way. And I played the interpreter. And I sat there and I watched theater for the first time. Do you know how important that was for my life? Teachers like this man. People like Dr. Rachel Yoakum, when I couldn't even say the word Benjamin, told me I had to say my name. And she said, you're going to go to the high school for the performing arts. She was the principal of the dance department. And they tried to kick me out. She said, no, he's going to stay. People like that. Yeah. Yeah.
What about you, Ben?
Thank you.
Well, you know, we were talking about whether or not, you know, teaching is cool. And let's think about like Twitter, for instance. Like, you know, like part of my gig is I make albums. I have to say something every once in a while on Twitter, right? So it's like one day I said, I got a new album out. Yeah, it's about 900 people had something to say about that. That's cool. And the same day, I was inducted into a thing in North Carolina, and I brought out my high school, junior high school band teacher, mm-hmm. who was a huge influence on me. He was a great man. It took him, I don't know, 45 minutes to get to his chair. I mean, he hadn't been able to get out of his house in a long time. It meant a lot to him to see his student come into this, and it was a big deal. So we put off the thing and the speech, waiting for Chick to get to his chair, took a picture together, put that up on Twitter, thousands. In fact, there was so many people that were interested in this who could relate to it, who could relate to the impact that a teacher had had on me. And then therefore, as their friend, they understood that that happened to them too. And I mean, it was even like I was in the street. Someone would come up, Mr. Folds, I just saw that picture of you and your band teacher. That's amazing. And then they told me their story. You find out what resonates, and what we're told resonates is something that's sexy. But sometimes what resonates is actually what's real. You know, and you rattled off a list of incredible people in your life who didn't have to do that. They not only didn't have to do that job, probably didn't get paid well for it, and they certainly didn't.
Still,
are
not getting paid for it.
Yeah, they're getting paid probably less in a way. But no, I had teachers who three that I can think of that really really changed my course, and it's huge, and it's a problem because when we have an argument over whether government should step in and pay more, when we say, you know, our teachers didn't get paid. It doesn't cost money to make music. We could sit in the floor right over there in the corner and we could play music and that wouldn't cost a thing. And so then there's another argument that steps in that says, oh, you just admitted music costs nothing. Therefore, we're not going to put it in the budget. We're going to give you nothing. But I would say that even if all other arguments fail, the one that should prevail is the one that the federal government and state governments need to at least symbolically come close to matching the importance for the public. Because if they don't, that's all that music is a symbol. And you look at like a symphony orchestra, that is a very high symbol of civilization, for instance. Like the army is the anti of that. It's like, but it's the same thing. It's people working together. Here's a bunch of people working together to kill people. Here's a bunch of people working together to make pretty or not pretty notes. But you have to have people working together, and music is a great persuader to do that. If it's not represented in the budget, we won't have a successful civilization. And that's why I keep coming up.
You know something very important, and that's the value of the teacher. You can understand that, you know, a kid will grow up and be a football player, and he'll make millions of dollars throwing a piece of skin across the floor. Here is the teacher who has prepared that child to get on that field. Don't you think they should be rewarded something better than what we're giving them right now? They are the backbones of who we are. And look at the way we treat them. And we're cutting their budgets? Oh, please.
We're cutting their budgets because, sadly, they're the people who will continue to hang on even with nothing. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. It's like their incentive is not money. So then the sharks up at the top go, look, they're doing it for nothing. give them nothing. Look, but they're doing it.
How did those sharks get to the top?
Exactly.
It's because of them.
Yeah, that's right.
It was because of them.
It's hard to recognize that for some people. Yeah.
No, the teachers, you know, the unsung heroes, they do it for the love of the craft and for the impact they have. It's very rewarding, but that's why we're here. Partly why we're here is to make sure that our policy, we our hear, education we
hear,
policy.
We want to let them know we hear you, and we're here to make a change about this right now, today. We're claiming the victory. We hear you, and we will not be go unrecognized.
Then you made a good point about symphonies. You made a comment about it last week. It said you could. You said there are two kinds of cities. Mm. Why do you think symphonies are such a metaphor for a healthy and vibrant community?
I should add to that that I'm sure most teachers, educators have seen this, but if anyone hasn't seen the Land Philharmonic, you've seen that, right? Have you ever seen that? YouTube that, you'll be amazed. I mean, basically, what you're talking about in that video is you're looking at people that are so poor that they have to go to the landfill and put together with boxes and anything they can find to make violins, cellos, and they form an orchestra. And the orchestra is good. It's very good. And what's inspiring about that is that they're recognizing that this is theirs. They can take that. So when I say, if I'm critical of a city that doesn't have an orchestra, I want to point out that although it does take money, if a city doesn't have very much money, there is still a way of doing it, and it's part of who we are. But the reason that I'm so adamant about it is because, one, when you erase the symphony orchestra from our current memory, when that happens, when we fund it so poorly that all the principal players go to work at Starbucks and can't come back anymore, it won't come back anytime soon. Mm-hmm. It took hundreds of years to refine even just the protocol of a rehearsal. That doesn't come back. It's like when you go through TSA right now with your camera, and they say, turn it on. I can't turn it on. This is a film camera. It's what? It's a film camera. It doesn't even have a battery in it. They're like, don't understand. But people have amnesia. Like, we have social amnesia about things. If you lose the symphony orchestra, you've lost that. Then what you've lost is the symbol of civilization. For people to work together, whether it's government. That's why I always say, like, you know, Congress should just watch a rehearsal. Just watch a rehearsal of any symphony orchestra. It's orderly. We get to the point. And if that symbol isn't there, I grew up with it. And I grew up, I was lucky enough to get to play in a local youth orchestra. That's amazing. And, you know, it was boring to me. It was. I threw paper wads at girls' hair in the back of the, but it stuck with me.
If only Congress could operate as a symphony.
Yeah, I think so.
As a metaphor.
Yeah, and I mean, I think we saw that happening on 9/11 with even the politicians just spontaneously singing together.
That's wonderful. On the symphony. We are the symphony of life. I love that.
And we work in concert.
We work in concert. If we would only recognize that and stop cutting away at the funding for it's so important. You know, I was listening to you and I was thinking about the fact that I remember I was in China and Mao had taken over and he sent all the musicians to the fields. And this one cellist who was like the top premier cellist in China said, he said, Mao said, I want you to be my cellist. He said, you're sending my fellow musicians to the fields, I'm going to the fields. He had not played the cello until one night. I came over to his house when I got to China. It was back in the day. This was when Nixon first opened the borders. And we went to his home and was sitting in his home with various people who were part of the arts. And he asked me, what you do? In his language, I say, I'm a song and dance man. He said, sing something. So I sang Memories from Cat's Form. He got up and went to his room, came back with a cello. He sat there and he played the cello for me. His children played the piano. And I watched the other gentleman in the room, tears were in their eyes. And I said, and he got up and left. And I said, what's going on? They said, he hasn't played that instrument since Mao. He said they used to come home and see their fellow musicians hung on trees around their village. But the power of music could not be suppressed. The symphony of life had to be heard. And they stayed with it. He was quiet, but inside of him, that music was the thing that kept him going. And we got to realize it's the music. We are the symphony of life, and we must support our symphonies. It's sad to see it be in Honolulu. It's bad to see it in some city and see the symphonies not supported. Some child in what we call the ghetto may get an opportunity to say, I want to be a part of that. We must be there to show them that we exist so that they have that opportunity to pursue that dream. There was-
was no party. There were no songs, 'cause today's just a day like the day that he started. No one is left here that knows his first name. And life barrels on like a runaway train where the passengers change. They don't change anything. You get off, someone else can get on. And I'm sorry, Mr. Jones. It's time.
Ben, kind of a little switch here, but you've been active in promoting arts as a way to keep teens healthy. In fact, you started a program called Wellness Through the Arts that features an essay contest, which was born out of your Ben Vereen Awards. Can you tell us a little bit about that and any success stories that you've seen come out of that program?
Oh, yes. You know, we started the program out because of the fact that I noticed that the arts have been cut from schools. And the Ben Vereen Awards is a part of the Jimmy Needlander's Jimmy Awards. And what they do is they send out a list of musicals to high schools and that can afford them. And they put on these productions and they come to the Ben Vereen Awards. And I look up on stage, I said, all my children are not here. Why? They said, because the arts have been cut. I said, we must do something about it. So I came up with this program to write essays on BOLD, bullying, obesity, low self-esteem, and diabetes. If you're living with these opportunities in life, talk about, the essay should be entitled, My Best Day. And five will win. They'll win $500 a piece. The school get $1,000. And they come to the awards. They get to sit in on actors who are going, the kids who want to go into the theater. They get to see this part of performing art of life. I take those five essays. I put it with a composer and with a dramaturg. And they come up with they put together a 5-10-minute show using those essays of what the children's voice, or what they feel, or what their bullying issues, their obesity issues, their low self-esteem issues, living with diabetes, and talking about their best day. One story, listen to this, this young girl who'd just come from Korea. She was in the Poway School of Music in San Diego. I go, and a friend of mine, her was named Jerry Webb, who's a conductor, she said, I have a young lady you should meet. So I go to the school, and there's this young girl playing the cello beautifully. And the story is, when she was in the second grade, she got bullied. And she, because of the way she spoke, her language, she stopped talking. She stopped talking, and her family, her mother had not heard her talk verbally. And she just nodded her head, but she picked up the cello to express herself. She picked up a musical instrument to express herself. We honored her this year. And she played the cello and brought tears to everybody's eyes. That's why I'm an advocate for the arts. I believe if we give the arts, maybe that child who's thinking destructive will not pick up a gun, maybe pick up a violin and have a better life. That's why we're promoting Wellness Through the Arts. And arts heal. Period. It heals a society.
Wow, that's pretty powerful. Congratulations on
Thank you. That and vision. We're coming to your city, by the way, so watch out for us.
You know, I think there's an interesting challenge to all artists to pay it forward, right? And not everyone does. Not everyone does what you guys are doing. Why do you think it's important that artists actually use their voice to talk about this issue?
Well, I mean, I don't know why some of us are compelled, to pay back into where you came from. I think that there's a myth, and it's not healthy, that there is any such thing as a self-made man. I mean, the thing is that you are on the shoulders of others no matter what. And the idea, it's like he's independently, like he did it all himself. I think that Outliers book by Malcolm Gladwell was really helpful in that for me. Mm-hmm. That book, I mean, it wasn't what put me, over the top, but it really, I think about this because what Malcolm was saying in that book was that if you point out any successful person, you like look at their speech and they're like, I came from nothing, blah, blah, blah. You didn't. You might have, but you didn't. You still were tapping into the power of the people around you into what you had. And sometimes that can be more powerful. I mean, I know some kids that are pretty well off, and I look at the lack of tools that they actually have in order to succeed in music. And some of that might be grit, you know. But I think that some people really believe that it's possible that they did it all themselves. And I just don't believe that, first of all. I think secondly is often we have been like, the bullying that you describe with this kid, and it's common, but bullying happens on all levels. And I think consider middle class America, just your average middle America. How often does someone in average everyday life stand up and sing in a bank or stand up and sing in an airport? But the thing is like the first thing that you did last night, Ben, when you were speaking to us at the dinner, you sang. Well, that's shocking to people because they're not used to taking that kind of freedom and doing that. But if you go to a pub in Ireland, guy might stand up and sing. And then there's a fist fight and someone gets their ass kicked and then they all give each other a big hug. And then someone else gets up and sings. I guess my point is that the cello in this kid's case, that's how it came out eventually. And with the help of you and others around, some support and an internal flame that is still burning. If you think about middle America, and this is why I like a cappella music programs being cut, people being told don't sing in a bank, don't sing in an airport, don't sing anywhere. That's weird. You're a weird person for singing. And then they get together in groups and they sing a cappella. And there's so many of them. You know, at any given university now, there's like 6 a cappella groups that have nothing to do with the education. And with music education, it's not paid for. They don't even give them a space to rehearse some of the time. And they haven't sung in years. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, we're allowed to sing in these groups. So instead of going into a fraternity, and look, I got nothing against a keg stand or, you know, whatever those kids do, I don't care. But I would argue that maybe, you know, singing is better. But I think it's amazing that it comes out anyway. Yeah. Now, this is not an oppressed group of people. You don't say, oh, the middle American, you know, kind of average kids. This is not a bit, but they are bullied into being silenced artistically. And they're bullied into the idea that the arts are a sideshow. And then they step forth and like, I have people all the time in the same conversation. They'll say, man, we love that TV show you did with the a cappella kids. We love that. We love that you're into the teachers and into music education. And then they'll say, where are you going? Well, I'm going to Capitol Hill to fight for arts funding. They go, well, I wish you'd go fight for getting some health insurance or food on the table instead of that. That seems like a little bit of a sideshow. And they haven't put it together, you know, and then you have to put it together for them. Mm. It's interesting, but I think that we've been divided successfully. Like
yes.
That.
We see, we have not, we've been, Dick Gregory says it beautifully. We have been taught to make a living instead of how to live. Mm-hmm. If we knew how to live, you wouldn't have these conversations. We'd be having this conversation because we know the value of life itself.
I think a theme that I've heard several times this morning already was that you can't suppress it. It finds a way to come out, whether it's spontaneous a cappella singing, or the Paraguay orchestra that you talk about where they made their own instruments. You can't suppress this feeling. It's
life itself. Embrace it and feel it and feel the beat.
Mm-hmm. I think what we're saying is not support the arts because we like to make little cute things and we like to sing little songs. What we're saying is the arts are us. It's here. Are you going to let it work for you and make it a better world? Or are you going to let it work against you and have to listen to some really dirty language in some rap music that might offend you that I happen to love?
Yeah. You are the art in which you're suppressing. Stop suppressing yourself.
You know, it has been a rough year in the U.S. Here and abroad. We have been overwhelmed by many events that can shake our resolve and our optimism. I can ask your thoughts on the power of music and arts to heal communities divided by social, racial, and economic justices and injustice. Love to hear your thoughts.
It's like I said in the beginning, the beat. Where I don't care what language you speak, what path you're walking, when you hear that music, you gotta move. Give everybody the right tune and everybody will dance. The right beat, everybody will dance. The right sound, everybody will sing. various languages, but they're singing the same music.
Yeah, I mean, I would point out that back to policy, which is boring, is that, you know, we spend hopefully 150, maybe 300 million is what I think it should be at the least on the NEA. There are those that say that that's a waste of money. If you look at the military, talking about the beat, they spend 600 million on music, right? That's just the military. For everyone else, it's smaller. So I think that shows that we know that the beat is important, because when it comes down to it, when it's a life or death issue, suddenly we need it and we need to spend on it. One little story, when the sing-off show on NBC that I did for a while, which is an a cappella television show, was interesting because it was, there was no safety net, there was no tuning, there was no backing tracks. It's just kids come on and they sing a cappella, and you either can do it or you can't. And it's amazing to watch. In the five seasons that we did, the handlers, the people who are reality TV show handlers that are used to taking care of all these reality TV show people in their hotel, debauchery, they're going out, going nuts, like they have to keep them out of jail. I mean, they're away from home. In our case, on the sing-off, they didn't have to do anything. The kids that sang together in these a cappella groups, they didn't fight. They didn't have the kind of problems that all the other reality TV stars have. And I would argue it's because they're singing together all the time, whatever differences they might have in that day, which is one of the problems. I mean, I like Pitch Perfect fine, but I think that the idea of turning singing together into that kind of drama kind of takes out an important message about music, which is it tends to bring people together, not starts. It doesn't tend to start the wars.
Right. Yeah, you know, I just want to point out that the WTA, I'm very proud to say, is in San Diego, we're moving into the youth detention centers, and we're putting the program in there to change lives. And we're going to move that, and we're in Sacramento, and we're in Tucson, and we're looking to move quite into other cities. But I want to get to those young people. Yeah. Wellness through the arts. Give them the arts and see what happens to our society and to the world. If we, in answering your question, as I said in the beginning, if we give people the tools of productive, positive thinking, a positive way to express themselves, I like to believe that we would have a better world. It's been proven. You see how music changed. I was in the hospital at Kessler in rehabilitation, and my singing teacher, Dr. Riley, would bring up opera singers to sing, and the vibration in the air could be felt.
Yeah.
In the floors above me. And people would say, come to me the next day, say, did you have some music going on? The vibration heals people.
You know, on the topic of healing, and you were mentioning your horrible car accident and the way that you relate to it, that in fact is music therapy, which is also a really important part of what we need to be funding is music therapy, and not just playing bongos or acoustic guitar in someone's room or hanging a piece of art, but actually neuroscience shows us a lot about that. And if you just think about the one case of Congressman Giffords, it was shot in the head. Yeah. And it wasn't clear that she was going to speak again because it had damaged probably the speech center, which is a very small part of the human brain. Speech center is very small. Music is planted over the entire system of the brain in different ways. The neuropaths that are formed by music, they're just everywhere in your brain. So what happened with Congressman Giffords is that she wasn't speaking, and they brought in a music therapist, and they were getting words out of her, I think within 15 minutes. And this is actually neuroscience. It's not just like, hey, we're playing our records. There's a very scientific method to this. And I think it's very compelling for people to put this forth when we're arguing for the arts, is to say, would you rather invest in all the things that we need to invest in for someone who's invalid? Or would you rather invest in having someone who's a well-trained music therapist come in, who very likely can get this person out of the hospital, as was the case? Now, it's not for everything. Yeah. You can't get your leg back that way, but you can get your gait back that way. And you can't get everything in your brain back, but you can form new neuro highways. And that's so proven. And they're learning more and more about that. And that, look, for conservatives, dude, this is a way to save a lot of money. And like, you know, drugs are nice and everything, but you don't have to use them every time.
That's right.
Yeah, you know, it's so beautiful. I, to my point, exactly, the beat of life. And if you give people that tool, it heals. It heals. You know, I'm thinking about the fact that, you know, a person, speaking of that at Kessler, there was a gentleman there, he was a Hasidic Jew, and he had what they call lockdown. And he was, his entire body had locked down. The family was there. And this opera singer, these people come up and they play music for me. And we had music going. And one day he opened his eyes. When he heard the music, he opened his eyes. That beat inside of him, that vibration awakens something inside of us that says, I can.
That's right.
And I will.
It's powerful stuff.
It is. And we keep snuffing it out. We're trying to suppress it and try to not allow it.
The man who produced my recent record with a piano concerto on it, he's a legend. He's amazing. He went into a coma soon after we finished the recording, and they had counted him out. Because you know some of the testing that they do for this, I'm a musician. I don't know the science of it, but I could see that what a lot of it was say they'd pinch him. You know, see if anything, and then they'd someone would yell at him, different things to see if they can get any kind of reaction, good or bad. They decided that he was locked in, like I said, so there's nothing in there. Brought a music therapist in, and he was awake in 24 hours. And, you know, I was talking to the music therapist before, not the therapist, but the one that recommended it, there was a chain. So, but, you know, I was joking, I was saying, you know, when we were working in the studio, he hated my violinist's tone. It drove him crazy. Would you want to bring him in? And they were like, yes, actually, because it's not all positive. Yeah. Art is both ways. You know, sometimes it's like, but it's purely human. If you're angry, there's an angry note. If you're happy, there's a happy note. And for him, it's quite possible that one way of getting his attention might have been to have my poor friend Rob, who's one of the best violin, yeah, to play the worst note he could find, and for Elliot to go, I'm awake.
Make it stop.
Make it stop. That's a neuropath in your brain, and it's much more powerful than the Broca's area.
It's in our DNA.
You know, the early music research, scientific and medical research, was based on understanding more about how children brains are wired differently when they have music education. And that was very much a driver in our work on Capitol Hill. More recently, the work is being done on healthy aging and music's role either through therapy as we're being treated for these various things, or actually how to stay healthy longer, how to keep your mental faculties longer, and using music and using art as a way to connect and have a healthier process of aging. It's really, we're on the cusp of, I think you're right, a kind of a revolution in healthcare as well.
Well, think about we're a society that just doesn't respect age. Like it's awful, you know, like, I don't want to be old. Well, guess what? You'll be very lucky to be it one day, right? But we take their music and everything, we just chuck it aside. You put a pair of headphones on someone in a home who's 85, 90 years old, or maybe older, and maybe there's some senility or something there. All of a sudden, boom, they come to, they're singing every word of it, they're speaking coherently, take the headphones off and 5 minutes later. So by saying, you know, your music sucks, I don't like that old stuff, we're not going to play that anywhere. Mm-hmm. It's part of it. It's part of taking someone and trying to divide them up and saying, and you can see how powerful that is when you put a pair of headphones on, visit your great grandmother one day and put a pair of headphones and play some Benny Goodman and watch her freak out.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. It heals.
Yeah. Well, we're almost approaching the end, so I'm going to kind of switch gears here. We had an interesting little conversation last week. We're in Cleveland, and we asked the guests, did you have or have any remembrances of indulging in a fun political movie or any political movie you might have seen that you thought was, because we're here at the DNC, any political movies come to mind that you'd watched and thought were interesting or funny or terrible or good? There's been so many movies made about politics or presidents and stuff. Anything jump out?
There was a movie that Peter Sellers made some years ago. And he played this gentleman who had never been out of the home, his home. He was raised in this little house. And one day the owner died who had adopted him, and he was a gardener. And they kicked him out of the house, and he walks up the boulevard in Washington, and he gets hit by one of the richest people in the government. Shirley MacLaine takes him to her home, and he is involved in just being. It's called being there. He knew nothing about politics, and he watched television. He watched the arts. That's all he knew. He didn't care about anything else but the fact of him being there. And he kept wondering who this guy was. Yeah. And everything came. So you remember good. This movie? And at the end of the movie, they said life, something like life is a metaphor, something of that nature. And Peter Sellers walks out on water.
Yeah, that's good.
So if you get an opportunity, see Being There with Peter Sellers.
What about you, Ben?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think, that's a good example for me. I mean, most political movies I don't think of as a good time usually. I actually, I like South Park.
Mm.
I think it's incredibly fair, audacious show. You will be offended at some point, but then everyone else is going to get offended as well. And I think politics on their level, taking it away from the binary left and right, is very healthy. It's not seen as healthy for people generally over 45, but I somehow didn't get the memo.
There's some truth in that. I remember a movie called Dave, where a presidential impersonator through a wacky series of events ends up sitting in the president's chair. Remember that?
That sounds awesome.
And to see him in one scene in the movie where they're having a budget meeting, and he basically, there's this homeless program they're trying to cut, and it's $650 million, and he just pulls out the budget. And with all the secretaries around this huge table, he starts basically looking at it as if he was planning his family's budget. And he balances it, and he finds the money for the homeless program through just sheer common sense that we as Americans have to face every day at our kitchen tables. It was genius.
Yeah. No, that is genius. That's part of the disconnect, again, that we're talking about. The one standard for society as a whole, or for the government, another standard for someone. I mean, we're businessmen as artists. We have to balance a budget.
Yeah.
I'm always looked at like, oh, you little artist character, you probably can't balance checkbook.
Yeah.
No, drive around in a van with a rock band for 10 years on nothing, sleeping on floors, and tell me I can't balance a budget. Yeah. I can't.
On the floor of the bus.
Yeah.
Sleep on the floor of the bus.
Well, I think this is great. I've enjoyed sitting in for Mary Larson from the NAMM Foundation. She'll be back for the next podcast, but I don't know. I may have to give her a run for money. I've enjoyed doing this. So you've been listening to Talking Up Music Education, recorded live at the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia. I'd like to thank our very special guests today, Ben Folds and Ben Vereen, for sharing their thoughts with us on the importance of music in the arts during this election season. And indeed, every day, as we work to assure that music and arts are part of communities everywhere and available to all children as part of a well-rounded education. Thanks for joining us. And if you'd like to, if you like what you've heard today, please tell your friends. And don't forget to leave your 5-star review on this program on iTunes. Thank you very much.
Talking Up Music Education is a podcast created by the NAMM Foundation. To learn more about how you can support music education in your community, or how you can be part of the work of the NAMM Foundation, visit our website, www.namfoundation.org, or join us on Facebook at facebook.com/NAMM Foundation. You can also follow Mary on Twitter at Mary LNAMM.